to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Dusty White, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Cormdale Church and Pastor Chris Himmelman of First City Church. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today we're talking about 2025 year in review.
Happy last day of 2025,
listeners. We made it. We made it through.
December 31. Welcome to the final day of 2025. We haven't made it through yet, Chris.
We're almost there. Hold on for just a few more hours.
Seriously.
I always, when we do an episode like this, first of all, we miss Bethany.
Yeah, she's usually the one that really makes episodes like this awesome.
She really helps. So bear with us because Bethany's not here.
Best of 2025 for her was welcoming a new child. So
yeah,
that's a win.
Additionally, representing here.
Oh, yeah.
On the Wednesday Conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about this, Dusty.
The Chippers are in front of us, which is a chocolate-covered potato chip from Fargo, North Dakota. I got this gifted to me for the Wednesday Conversation by Andy and Katie Doden. They are listeners, especially Katie. Andy made it clear.
That's right,
Katie. My wife listens.
That away, Katie.
I don't know if he listens at all.
Make sure Andy listens today.
Katie's into it. So, hey, thanks, Katie, for blessing us with chippers. You know, when you hear about a chocolate covered potato chip, you're not exactly sure what you're getting into, but it works. It works. Yeah.
The salty sweet.
Somehow these, like, you had to personally get these.
So, my family and I were going to Montana because my wife's from Montana. And I was like, man, who do I know along the way? Because it's an 838 mile drive, right? So sometimes in the winter, we'll stop in Fargo. And I was like, man, I got to get two hotel rooms for like 7 hours. And that just feels like a lot of money, you know, but I've done it before, but I was like, who do I know? And, you know, friends in Louisville have taught me that Christians should not, he gives this huge spiel on why Christians should not be paying for hotels when there's other Christians.
Yeah, that know. And that's right.
We should have gospel
that's
hospitality.
Right. Come on. Amen.
So in a time of need, I was like, oh, I could get a hotel. That'd be the self-sufficient thing to do. But who do I know in Fargo? So I reached out to our pastor friends in Fargo because we get to be networked in this area, right? And he was like, oh, I know just the couple for you. So Andy and Katie were going to house my family for one night. However, the weather was so bad, we did not go. But on the way back from Montana through North Dakota, Andy made sure to make contact with me. He's like, we have a gift for you. So he gave us, my family, some chippers in a separate box and then gave the Wednesday Conversation some chippers.
Nice.
How do we know that you're giving us the Wednesday Conversation ones and you didn't keep seven boxes for your family and just bring one box to the
this
podcast?
This is the Wednesday Conversation one because this box is smaller.
Exactly. That's the one my point. We kept.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting. So, Andy, I want to make sure that if you meant to give Dusty's family the bigger box, that's great. If there's been any shady business here, I just want you to send us an email.
I'm owning it. I was like, well, clearly the bigger box is for us at home.
Yeah, and clearly.
The smaller box is for you.
All right.
You young lads.
I just have a question. Does it matter what kind of potato chip? Is there a certain brand that works best for this?
I don't know.
This is a great question. I'm going to read the label that's on the side of the box and see if they say anything about it. Ingredients. Sugar, cocoa butter, milk, chocolate liquor, soy lecithin, artificial flavoring, salt, white potatoes. So it sounds like they actually like use the potato and make their own potato.
Okay.
Like they're not just pouring chocolate on top of a Ruffles.
Yeah.
Ruffles. This is a custom operation here.
Yeah. Yeah. Make your own potato chip. Okay.
As we talk about 2025, guys, I want to start kind of with the easiest question around the table, which is, Chris, how many bones did you break in 2025?
Zero for me.
Great job. Me too. Zero for me.
Bob, man, how about guys, you? Six for me.
Man.
That's a
well,
lot.
And one of them was broken in four places. So maybe we could just say 10. I could get to double digits breaks. If you guys would let me do some creative math. So
one bone in six places.
No, sorry. One bone in four places.
One bone, four places.
Wow. Yeah. But then, yeah,
six,
others besides.
Yeah, six. Six total. Ow.
Man. Five total. Three ribs. One clavicle, one pelvis. So, yeah.
You're a little beat up.
I'm not happy about it. It's not my favorite memory of 2025, but sure. I do feel, thanks for making it feel like I beat you at something. That's sort of good. Yeah. It's putting a certain kind of competitive spin on it that I appreciate. Right.
It was good. And hey, to be fair, you've mended pretty well by the end of the year.
Yeah, God's been gracious. Thanks for your prayers.
Well, let's start with something second. Let's go to the second idea here, and let's just cover some reading, guys. What did you take in this year through reading that you appreciated or that challenged you, that you were into it?
I tried to go deep in a couple subjects this year, or actually a couple authors. I tried to read everything that Richard Lovelace wrote, and I've tried to read everything that Leslie Newbegin wrote, which actually that's not true. The major books that Newbegin wrote, because apparently that guy is prolific. If you tried to read everything he wrote, I think it's like 120 various articles and publications. Wow. Okay. So I tried to read, the stuff that Lovelace wrote and then Newbegin, just trying to get into those two authors have been particularly formative for me in various ways. And I just realized, I've read some of their stuff, but I want to read more. I want to sort of get a fuller exposure to their thinking and to how their thinking sort of progressed over time. So that's what I tried to do.
Besides Dynamics of the Spiritual Life,
this is what made it easy for Lovelace is he didn't write very much. He wrote a chapter in a book. Shoot, I'm going to blank on the title of this book. A chapter in a compilation book. He actually wrote a book titled Homosexuality in the Church in the 70s, where he was trying to sort of deal with the apologetic questions about how should the church relate to homosexuals. And so that it actually is a super interesting book in light of the fact that we're still asking some of those same questions in different ways today. He wrote a book on Cotton Mather. His doctoral dissertation was on the American Pietism of Cotton Mather, which was a fascinating book to read because I actually wasn't that familiar with Cotton Mather. And because apparently he's a challenging figure for historians to write about because he had sort of a positive view of slavery. And so Christian historians kind of haven't wanted to sort of reckon with him. And Lovelace was just like, hey, this guy had a big influence on colonial America. We need to sort of think about him. So it's a real interesting read. So basically that's the sum and substance of Lovelace's writings.
So I reread, not the whole thing, but a good chunk of The Wonderful Works of God. I took a guy through it as part of his elder development. So that's always going to be an encouraging. But the two new books that I would kind of put at the top of the list. First, Bob, I told you about this one, Against the Machine.
Yes.
By Paul Kingsnorth. Yes. Recommend that. He's right. In a lot of ways, he's writing about kind of our cultural moment, the dehumanizing nature of our moment. But he does so, I wouldn't say that everything he says is new, but the way he articulates it feels pretty fresh, especially considering his background. He was a former pretty extreme environmentalist. And it's kind of in some ways tamed down, but just the way he is talking about how essentially he boils down like our modern world to the sense of like throwing off any sense of limit. So it's just consumption, throw off limits. And just he's very artful in the way he writes. And so I really enjoyed that. And then as part of working through my transition and taking on a challenge of stepping into a new call, I've been reading this book called Tempered Resilience.
That sounds like an awesome title.
Yeah, it's about it just leading through change. And so he's drawing a lot on Edwin Friedman.
Who's the author?
Todd Bolsinger. Fuller, I believe. Been reading through that. So those are the two books that I would say are probably been the best.
Mm. Well, over to you, Dusty.
Guys, my favorite book of 2025 was How to Know a Person by David Brooks. That book was great. It's a lot, kind of very comprehensive, but not too comprehensive that you can't. Yeah, I just also like David Brooks. Like the way he writes is just super readable, super just pulls you in. And then,
do you know he spoke at my son's college graduation?
I did not.
Sorry, that was unrelated to you.
I like it. I like it. I'm glad that he did. And then On the Road with St. Augustine, I read finally, by James K. Smith, which was interesting. I hadn't read it. I'd had that book forever. Finally read it. And then I always go back to, and I did this year, I always go back to The Roots of Endurance, which is a little book in a 3-part series that Piper wrote. On some old dead guys, So when I'm just, you know, feeling weary or need some endurance, I go back to stories. I'm like, oh yeah, I don't have any problems. These guys have really,
you know, it's amazing. We need to think about like who's going to pick up that mantle for Piper, because he did a great job like bringing you in touch with old faithful people in a way that wasn't like he was trying to write a biography of them, but he's just kind of bringing you into their story. He was some of his biographical sermons were so good.
Yeah. And he, yeah, he has just these synthesized books.
Chris, maybe that's your, maybe you need to pick up that mantle and be that guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Especially you could start with Bob Inc. Probably.
Yeah. Start with Bob Inc. Yes.
So, Soul Keeping by John Ortberg is a book that my team here in the care and counseling area read, just about like, you know, tending to your own soul and how to do that kind of work. So we did a slow read as a team through that book, and it was really, really beneficial for us as individuals. And then obviously for our ministry. Mm-hmm. So guys, we're all pastors here. Tell us about one of your funnest ministry moments of 2025. Could have been a place you spoke or went, or maybe it was a sermon you preached or a conversation you had.
I got a lot of these. There's a couple young couples in our church that my wife and I have been investing in, just having them over for dinner, talking about life. They know who they are. They're probably listening to this podcast, but that's just been really fun for us because it's sort of, it's unscripted. It's not like, hey, we're going to study Romans or we're going to go through this book. It's just like, come over for dinner and let's just talk about whatever. And whatever is just a fun category to have on the table with people who are trying to figure out, what does it mean to follow Jesus? What does it mean to be married? You know, what should I do with my life? Those kinds of questions. So that's been a really fun experience for us this year. And then I think what this year will always be for me, Dusty, is, you know, our 20th anniversary at Coram Deo. And then I also got to go to Frontline Church's 20th anniversary in May in Oklahoma City. It's a church that we've been partnered with for a number of years. And so it just felt fun to sort of like go celebrate with them and then come back and be like, oh yeah. And we're sort of like crossing that same line this year. There's a lot to thank the Lord for, a lot of stories to share, you know, some good ones and some hard ones. But a lot of those will be key memories for me this year.
So a couple things for me. One, about I think it was last fall, so a little over a year, Mindy and I started leading a gospel community again. And when we first started leading, someone else was hosting it, because at the time our basement was a construction zone and there was no really good place to put the kids. So it was kind of March-ish is when we started hosting along with leading. And it has been so life-giving for us. And the GC we lead is, the interesting thing is, this is the first gospel community we've been a part of where everyone was significantly younger than us. So most of the folks are in their 20s, maybe early 30s. A lot of, we have three couples that have been married for a year, maybe at most a year and a half. And so that's been fun. And so just being able to invest in some younger believers, some younger couples that consistently blow us away about how mature they are at that age. And so it's just been super, super fun. And they're, yeah, in some ways it's like, okay, yeah, I'm the pastor's wife, but it's not weird. They're just so cool about it. There's this honor that they show to us, but they also engage us really well just at a personal level. So been super life-giving. So we've been really enjoyed doing that this year. And then one of the biggest ministry development wins that I've experienced as a pastor is, so Eric Adele, who has been at First City from the beginning, he and I were the first staff member. So he has been with me from the beginning, was installed as an elder, or he was affirmed as an elder this month.
Congrats.
And just to see a guy develop over 10 years and then step into this role and just the way the Lord has worked in his life. And so just I feel that like a kind of the pastoral level, leadership development level, but just to see a guy develop, it's just a joy in that. And then the last thing I'll say is it was October. We unexpectedly baptized 15 people. It was not planned. The baptism service was something that just sort of organically evolved. We talked to one person about getting baptized and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we got these other people who've become Christians. We should have a whole baptism service. So we packed out Lloyd Street. Such a fun morning. And so it's just exciting when you just see the Lord working in that way, in a very unexpected way. And you're like, there's a bunch of people getting baptized. Come on.
Yeah, that's legit.
I love it. I think one of my favorite ministry moments was just attending Sacred Mission Church in Collins, Iowa. We were able to go there, my wife and I, as they installed their first lay elder, which, you know, we've all helped.
Yeah.
So many people have helped plant this church, support it in this real small farming community in Iowa. And just to know from the inception, but when that church was just an idea, and then to see it now go through a lot of trials, but to be where it is now is really beautiful. And just to just be there, like I was asked to pray and I just felt like, man, this is such an honor. Like just to be in the room for moments like that. Speaking of being in the room, the other fun thing that I had the pastoral opportunity to be a part of was, you know, throughout the year, I get to be a part of kind of some difficult situations, but also some really beautiful moments, kind of front row seat opportunities, I call them. And a family that was kind of in crisis asked me to help them. And what I realized in the moment was, okay, this is a lot. You know, there's a lot of people involved. Meetings like this don't usually go well. You know, there's so many emotions. There's a lot of opinions. There's more than three of us, you know, so this is going to be interesting. And what was beautiful in that moment for me was how I had known all of the people in that room for longer than like 15 years and had pastoral relational equity with them. And then also to feel like you're actually helping is a really beautiful feeling as a pastor. Cause you know, like you do a lot of things and you're like, I don't know if that was even helpful, you know, but to feel helpful and then to hear back, hey, this actually moved us forward. And you know, it's very fulfilling in your work to feel like, oh, I showed up to a complex thing and it actually felt helped.
Beautiful.
Taking notes over there. Like
I'm making stuff up over here. gentlemen, what parts of the Bible or the scriptures have come alive to you in 2025?
Gospel of Matthew for me, because we've been preaching it.
Yeah.
I've just spent way more time in it than I had previously. So that would be especially the Sermon on the Mount. You know, just, I've always loved the Sermon on the Mount, but just getting to do work in it this year for preaching has been really fun.
Yeah. The Gospel of Luke for me, it's always been my favorite gospel, but we started preaching it in the fall and kind of been breaking up in chunks. And I think the thing that I have grown in appreciation is the literary beauty and genius of Luke, like how he arranges the material. I mean, all the gospels have this, but just appreciating the way Luke has done this and the thematic tie-in and details.
Why do you think he's better than Matthew that way?
I don't...
Let's have a Luke versus Matthew.
Yeah, that's a good note.
Debate.
I mean,
I'm kidding.
I mean, it is interesting. Those nuances though.
Yes.
We did our fall Bible study that we wrote was on the life and ministry of Jesus. And so we were just taking different parts of Jesus's life and from different parts of the gospels. And so to see some of the differences of detail and some of the arrangement was a lot of fun to study as well. But there's the Gospels just contain such a beautiful literary element that I think sometimes gets missed in our, I don't know, or just going into maybe, I don't know, the history or going into kind of the theology. So appreciating the literary nature of it has been really fun.
It's also kind of fun to see how various authors emphasize certain things that they're not supposed to emphasize. What I mean by that is, like, you know, if you're a Protestant, your salvation is by grace through faith, you know, but Matthew is all about doing.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't care what you believe. He wants you to like do what Jesus said. And you see that so persistently emphasized throughout the Gospel of Matthew that it's almost like, man, if this was the only book you were preaching, I don't know, people would walk away feeling like you got to do a lot of stuff to be a Christian. And it's beautiful when you have that. You know, you have the fullness of the canon that gives you sort of the full revelation of God, but then you have these individual parts where it's like an author clearly is emphasizing this aspect of what it means to follow Christ or this aspect of what it means to be part of God's people that really needs to be sort of like front and center. And so you have to like take it for that author's particular emphasis and then set it within the whole canon. It's really fun to think about just the ways that various authors seem to highlight various aspects of of what it means to follow Christ. And again, I was being a little bit tongue in cheek. I'm not saying that Matthew said something he's not supposed to say, but it's just interesting that like Protestants, if the only book we had with Matthew, I think we'd be a little nervous. Like, ah, this guy's really into doing a lot, you know?
For me, I've just been in Colossians a lot, listening to Colossians, reading Colossians, and then also Isaiah 51 through 53. I've just had that on loop all year.
I bet you can almost memorize it just by listening to it, right?
Yeah. And then I have a daughter who can memorize stuff. It's incredible.
Man.
It's like kind of frustrating how good she is at memory. And so we kind of have a little bit of a competition, but she always honestly wins. Like that small or that younger, pliable, you know, knowledge base it's younger for a reason.
Yep.
You know, and then you draw on it later on. So that's where I've been. As far as like places you've been, shows you've watched that you've been dialed into, has there been anything pretty significant?
I'm going to go places. First of all, shout out to all of our Wednesday Conversation listeners in England. I got to be in England for a week earlier this year. It was great. What a joy. My first trip ever to England. Got to be in East Anglia in Suffolk, mainly hanging out with our friends at BRBC and Bury St. Edmunds. But also got to visit Cambridge, you know, it was fun to be in that part of the world and just sort of to immerse in, man, there's history here that's 1,000 years old, 2,000 years old. There's Roman history here. You know, I don't dig in my backyard and find Roman coins, but I mean, that's what happens in England.
You find Indian arrowheads though, right?
Yeah, sure. Sure. I might find an arrowhead, yeah. But I ain't going to find a Roman coin. So that was a sweet trip. And then I got to be in New York City back in May working on a film project with the Gospel Coalition. Actually, that's coming out in February, a little video curriculum called The Story of Us. And I particularly got to sort of craft and record the segment on the narrative of freedom. So it was all focused around the Statue of Liberty. I think I might have talked about it when I came back on this podcast, but it was really fun to do a trip to New York that was sort of a film project where it was like, we weren't there to like hang out and eat food and see the sights. We were there to get work done. And it was like, we got to capture this shot. It's got to be this time of day. We have to execute this script. There's a shot where we're on a boat and the waves were like tipping the boat back and forth. And so the camera guy is trying to hold the camera steady while I'm trying to sort of like talk to the camera while my whole body is like revolving 90 degrees back. It was really fun to just be like, man, it's like real work right here. These Hollywood actors don't get paid good money for nothing, you know? So that was a really interesting and fun trip this year to invest in some ministry work in New York City.
Compared to 2024, my travel this year has been not as exciting.
Yeah, you were all around the world.
I know. Last 2024 was crazy. So this year, we did a road trip to South Carolina for vacation. That was probably the highlight. I went to DC in March got to do assessments for Acts 29 and then got to spend some time hanging out with some of our close friends that when we lived out there, so get to spend some time there. So those are probably the two highlights as far as trips.
I looked at my calendar and I only traveled like 3 times in 2025.
One was to Montana to pick up these chippers.
Yeah. One was to fancy Fargo. But my wife and I did celebrate 25 years of our anniversary.
Yeah. Congrats.
In Cozumel. So that was a first for us.
Must be rough.
It wasn't bad at all. Yeah. I will say this, if you're going to go to Cozumel, you really need to be into scuba diving.
Oh,
and, it's kind of like going to a country club without your golf clubs. Like it's like, we didn't know what we were doing. So we're like, oh, I don't know if we should even be here. Cause we're not, it's all about scuba there. And we were not about that. I mean, we did do some snorkeling and it was beautiful, but that was about it. What are you longing for in 2026? As we close the books on 1 year of ministry and life, and we look towards 2026, Lord willing, what are you longing for in your own soul where you might need to kind of believe some of your own claims that you would preach about? Or what are you longing for in ministry?
I'm longing for more prayerfulness in both places. I think I realize a tendency. I think it's just like, you know, the age I am and I'm a cynical person by nature. I think it's easy for prayer to sort of become more of a discipline, less of a delight. I also think I said this to our church a few weeks ago, just, man, like we're well resourced. We're not scrappy like we were 20 years ago. We're not trying to figure out like how are we going to pay the light bill. You know, like the Lord's been kind to us. But I just think like that, you have less of a sense of dependence the more comfortable you are. And I think our church materially, resource-wise, people-wise is pretty comfortable. So I've just been hungry for like, man, I want to raise the level of prayer in my own life and in our church. Just be more prayerful. Just be more hungry. Just seek God more diligently.
Well, as I shared on the last podcast, next year's going to be a big year for us. We're going to be making the move to Georgia. And
wait, what? Go listen to the last podcast if that's news for you.
If you missed last week, surprise. And you know, with that, we are going to be stepping into a significant new challenge in a lot of ways. Stepping into leading a church that has done some good work to get healthy, but came out of a tough season of having to transition their founding pastor out. And so just the work of stepping into, I mean, I've only ever been a lead pastor in one place. It was a church that I built. And so stepping into, you know, a new system, new people, I'm excited for it. I'm looking forward to it. I think there's a lot of ways in which there's good alignment, and it's going to be being able to bring, you know, what we've been doing the past 10 years there. It's going to be beautiful, but there's going to be a lot of challenges, a lot of new things. And to your point, Bob, like feeling that just utter sense of dependence and like, Lord, you have got to work in this. Like I can bring my best strategies. I can preach, you know, the best sermons I've ever preached. I can, you know, do all of the things, but apart from the Spirit working to create unity and health and renewal and, you know, a sense of mission moving forward, like it's not going to be effective. And so I'm just feeling confident in the Lord, but also feeling out of my depth in a lot of ways. And so that is just driving me to prayer. And so I just want to, you know, again, echo what Bob said about just the prayerfulness in our own soul and then to lead the church in that as well.
I have kind of two areas I've noticed. Just the other day, I was reflecting on how, you know, JC and I have 6 children, and I don't want my presence with the younger, especially the younger 2, to kind of slip. And I almost feel my tendency towards that. I almost kind of feel like a little bit on autopilot as a parent sometimes. And I really want to give it my all, you know, especially to them. So it's interesting because they're the last couple of kids. JC and I are older. There's just, you know, it's a way different life that they're living, and that we're living. And then I think in ministry, I really felt in 2025, kind of this actual midlife moment where I was like, oh, I'm the oldest guy in the room. Why is that the case? When did that happen? You know, like we're hosting this gospel community. I'm like, why am I what's going on?
It's weird.
I'm not leading the gospel community, but I'm hosting it. And these younger people want to be there. And so what I'm driving at here is to say, I really want to settle into that in a crystallized way. I want to, settle in and accept where I'm actually at and not try to overextend or be inappropriately youthful. I still want to do a lot of things. I still got a lot of gas in the tank, right? I'm only 46. So it's not like I'm spent, but I really am realizing, with our church right now, especially with where we're currently at Coramdale, I really do need to disciple in a different way than next generation and give more of myself away as a leader.
Yeah. I was going to say, Chris, we just to dial back to your transition to Georgia, we are sad to lose you, but really actually more sad to lose Mindy. So we're bummed that you're leaving, but really the loss for us here in Omaha is no Mindy Hellman. That's a tough pill to swallow around here.
I know.
So you people in Woodstock better be nice to Chris and Mindy.
Yeah. My wife is, she can help build things, build she culture. Can.
Yeah.
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 She said she's going to bring it back.
She's going to bring it back. Yes.
She's going to be here Monday through Thursday and then in Woodstock on the weekend is what I heard. Just kind of like one of those travel jobs.
Hey, maybe you could work that out, actually. I talked to a pastor recently where he took a job in Denver, but he's actually going to let it, the church is letting him, his kids finish out the school year. So he's like literally commuting.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Okay.
I love it for him. I love that for him.
This might be a little bit of a, since we're doing year end, this is a little bit of a humble brag, but you know, my son Parker Thune is a Heisman Trophy voter. So this time in December every year, I remember like, oh yeah, this is like, you know what part of my legacy is like, is it, I raised a kid and he gets to vote for the Heisman Trophy. That's pretty sweet. So if you're a sports fan, it's like, that's kind of a big deal. So
how do you get to that place?
Is it, it's like a very finely, what's the word I'm looking for? A very curated process. So there's some Heisman committee and it has like regional superintendents. And this guy called my son like 3 years ago. I was like, hey, we'd like you to be a Heisman Trophy. He literally got this phone call and it's like some guy in Dallas who's like the Heisman Trophy supervisor for the region. And you have to be a sports writer. It's like there's criteria.
Yeah.
You have to be a sports writer. You have to belong to these various guilds and stuff. But, you know, he got invited. So, you know, when you get
That's
the phone call where when you get it, the answer is yes, right? Like, or do you just say like, I don't know if I want to be a Heisman voter. That seems like a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
So he voted for Mendoza.
Did he? Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask.
Yeah. He said, he told me afterwards, like, yep, that was my top vote was Mendoza.
Yeah. Nice. Not Johnny Manziel Jr.
Yeah. I mean, he liked him too, but he thought Mendoza had a better case. And, you know, it's fun to see that kid win. He's a great competitor.
Yeah.
He belongs on that committee because he can be objective enough.
That's right.
In his own kind of way.
He's not a homer. Yeah.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on 2025. We are grateful that you have listened probably all year and the years prior. So we're grateful
for that. That's right. Every week, every year.
That's right. Every week, every year. And really though, we do have a lot of gratitude towards you. And we, as we close out this year, and as we've just been reflecting briefly on our own year, we pray that the Lord has really met you in 2025. And then even to that longing question that I'm asking my friends here, I think it's appropriate at the end of the year, as we head into a new one, to be asking, man, what do I want the Lord to do in 2026, Lord willing? And how can I anticipate him working? And what should I be looking for and longing for and praying for? So that's a wrap on 2025 as we anticipate 2026. And the goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, thanks for listening in. We pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send us an email at podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next year for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.